Imagine a mile of bookshelves housed in a Georgian townhouse in Scotland's National Book Town, where over 100,000 books wait to be discovered. This is the bookshop in Wigtown, where Sean Bythell, self-described cantankerous curmudgeon, presides over a world that's equal parts literary haven and retail madhouse. In Confessions of a Bookseller, we're invited behind the counter for a year of bookselling adventures that reveal both the romance and harsh realities of independent bookselling in the Amazon age. The shop isn't just a business, it's an ecosystem with its own peculiar inhabitants, from the perpetually late staff member who dumpster dives for Foodie Friday treats, to the overweight shop cat who startles customers expecting a svelte kitten, but finding something more akin to a fat puma instead. Between these walls, every interaction becomes a story, every customer a character study, and every day a new chapter in the ongoing drama of literary life. The true heart of the bookshop lies in its cast of eccentric regulars and visitors. Nikki, a 40-something Jehovah's Witness, arrives perpetually late, considers Sean an impediment to the shop's success, and ignores his instructions. She hijacks the Facebook page to post about his midriff and creates chaos with her idiosyncratic shelving system. Then there's Granny, an Italian volunteer in her 20s who feels 85 inside and peppers her broken English with colorful profanity. The customers are equally distinctive. The silent mole man who buys books wordlessly, Mr. Deacon with Alzheimer's who maintains his love of books, and Bumbag Dave who appears at closing time. International visitors include a gentleman obsessed with Victorian button manufacturing books and a woman seeking books containing pressed flowers. What makes these characters compelling isn't just their quirks, but how they transform the bookshop into a sanctuary for individualism. When Granny fears a supposedly murderous cow, or Nikki crafts a wedding dress from vintage curtains with a matching bookmark bouquet, we glimpse a world where eccentricity isn't just tolerated, it's celebrated as essential to the human experience. Running an independent bookshop is financial warfare, not a romantic fantasy. Daily sales rarely exceed a few hundred pounds, sometimes as little as 20-30. Winter brings higher costs and fewer tourists. Amazon represents both opportunity and threat, squeezing margins while creating inventory headaches. Bythell's adaptations show remarkable resilience. The Random Book Club, sending monthly surprise selections, saved his business during a difficult period and now has over 100 worldwide members. Death to the Kindle merchandise creates competition-proof revenue. When faced with a 2000 planning application for his concrete book spirals, he funded it by charging supporters 20 per title. Book acquisition trips occasionally yield treasures like a signed Bertrand Russell book worth 400 or valuable fishing collections. Other times, exaggerated claims lead to disappointment, moldy paperbacks instead of rare editions. These journeys through the Scottish countryside provide both commercial opportunities and moments of reflection, as when he watches thousands of geese flying in V formation to roost on the salt marsh below Wigtown. The diary format perfectly captures how seasons govern life in both rural Scotland and the book trade. January begins with post-holiday emptiness. Spring brings retired couples in camper vans, and summer transforms the sleepy town into a hub of literary tourism. Autumn features the 10-day Wigtown Book Festival with its famous authors, followed by October's quieter period with occasional bargain hunters. Winter returns the town to its quiet state, with darkening days affecting mood. September through December is the worst time of year, when the cold, wet weather and shortening days sometimes make it feel like there's been no light at all. These seasonal patterns shape both business and lifestyle. Summer enabling beach swims and garden reading, winter offering fireside retreats with books and whiskey. Natural observations mark the changing seasons. The first frog croak, migrating swallows, or geese flying in formation serve as wildlife markers tracking the year's progress. Threading through the diary is a complicated relationship with Anna, an American writer adapted to rural Scottish life. Their relationship falters due to fear of commitment. When Anna returns to America, their separation is poignant. This may be not just the end of a chapter, but the closing of the book, he reflects, despite her being intelligent, funny, attractive, and wanting a life with him in Wigtown. At 44, mortality and legacy loom large. He compares himself unfavorably to his father, who, at the same age, was married, relocated, farm owner, 3 children, boarding school fees paid. Writing his will brings an abrupt sense of mortality. Books provide both escape and meaning throughout these personal struggles. His reading selections become a parallel narrative to daily life, with solace found in William Boyd's The New Confessions and appreciation for Martin Amis's Time's Arrow, literary touchpoints offering perspective while connecting him to broader human experience. The diary chronicles technology's transformation of the book trade. Amazon and online platforms create technical challenges with systems that frequently crash, sometimes for days, cutting off access to key market segments. Particularly frustrating are customers who browse extensively in-shop while price-checking on their phones. This isn't mere Luddite resistance. Strategic digital adaptation has created viral content, gaining international attention. Christmas videos featuring Nikki showcase the shop's personality and achieve thousands of views. Drone photography captures Wigtown's literary landscape, while listings span multiple online platforms. The popular Death to the Kindle mugs and videos showing how to upgrade a Kindle to a Kindle Fire represent both clever marketing and a stance on physical books' value. When Waterstones announces dropping Amazon Kindles, an analyst suggests the e-reader may turn out to be one of the shortest-lived consumer technology categories. This aligns with younger customers increasingly seeking physical books, particularly where tactile experience matters. Many express appreciation for real book sensory qualities, the smell, feel of pages, and satisfaction of filled bookshelves, suggesting our connection to physical books remains fundamentally human despite digital convenience. Despite challenges, the diary affirms physical bookshops' enduring appeal as spaces for discovery, community, and unexpected connections. The shop serves as a social hub where people browse, chat, and sometimes simply escape the rain. Physical browsing creates serendipitous experiences impossible online. A teenage girl meeting her friend's cousin, or a woman recognizing her long-lost uncle in an Edwardian portrait. Even as digital disruption challenges traditional retail, with over 50% of purchases now made online, nobody wants to live surrounded by closing shops. The diary concludes optimistically. The shop grows busier, Nikki manages nearby woodland, Granny settles in Galloway, where her eccentricities are appreciated, and Captain continues charming customers daily despite gaining weight, but not intelligence. This Scottish bookshop memoir demonstrates the cultural importance of independent bookshops as spaces where eccentricity flourishes, community forms, and the tactile pleasure of physical books remains vital. In our algorithm-dominated world, perhaps what we truly seek is not efficiency, but connection, the kind found only among dusty shelves, fellow readers, and a cantankerous bookseller keeping watch.